Hey guys, welcome back to Positive Impact with Andrew Schultz. So excited to come to you today with a very special friend of mine, a beautiful friend and a spiritual and sober sister. Her name's Lauren Osborne. Lauren, thank you so much for being here and joining the podcast.
And thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
So Lauren, I met Lauren a couple weeks ago. We are on the recovery journey together. Mm-hmm. On our sobriety. And Lauren joined one of our meetings that we put together with a friend of mine, Devin Craig. We started this meeting a couple months ago. And Lauren started joining in from New York. And she got to lead the meeting earlier this week. And Lauren, your lead and your experience, strength, and hope struck me so much that here we are 4 days later on a podcast episode. So it worked out really well.
That's so kind. Thank you.
So let's start out. Tell us, the audience, give us a perspective of, you know, what your life was like before you came into recovery and what it was like then. And then just kind of share your experience with before recovery and then into recovery and where you're at now.
Yeah, you know, I like to think of it as what I was like. And as opposed to like what it was like, because it didn't really matter what the outside was, you know, it was all about like the inside for me. And you know, of course, like, you know, I'm in recovery now, which means that I am an alcoholic and a drug addict. But long before I ever picked up any of those substances, I had what so many of us had. You know, I felt lonely, I felt disconnected, I felt separate from, I felt like my emotions were too big for my little body as a child. You know, my first escape was reading. I grew up in a traumatic, abusive, alcoholic home where I wasn't taught a lot of skills about how to communicate those feelings that were inside. And, you know, so the fight, flight, freeze cycle was enacted very early on. And since I couldn't fight back, I couldn't flee the situation, I froze. You know, and so I learned how to freeze. I learned how to shut down and I learned how to build up that armor. And, you know, once I started drinking, you know, I felt like I could breathe. You know, I kind of exhaled a little bit. Once I discovered drugs and I could actually be a part, I felt like I was actually for the first time in my life, a part of this world. There's a lot of people pleasing, a lot of perfectionism. I was like a straight A student. I went to a really prestigious like fine arts school, always top of my class in every, you know, star of every show, you know, all that kind of stuff, right? And then, you know, once I left that without any kind of structure, my life just fell apart. And slowly but surely, you know, alcohol started taking center stage. It was the end all, be all to my life. Everything I did revolved around it. You know, it was a progressive thing. You know, it didn't start out that way, but it became that way. I also want to mention, by the time I was 5 years old, I was suicidal, you know, and so the drugs and the alcohol actually kept me from that for a while until at the end, I was right back there. And the other thing that I wanted to mention is that I also have a chronic illness. I deal with chronic pain. A lot. So I was also self-medicating. So I was self-medicating my emotions and I was also self-medicating my physical pain. And the other big thing that happened to me when I was 19, I was in a car crash that almost killed me and I had a near-death experience and it was my first spiritual awakening. Mm-hmm. And I had 2 years of just like being in the flow of spirit. And then what happened was I just had all the human stuff started coming back in, all the fears, all the resentments, they just started piling up, piling up, piling up. And so I lost that awakening. I just fell back asleep again. And so, you know, I finally got to the point where I was just going to, I was dying slowly, but then I was going, you know, I was also about to take my own life. You know, it was just a kind of Russian roulette every day when I woke up, whether that was going to be my last day on this earth. And I was going down to work. I live in New York and the train was subway was coming and I started stepping in front of it and something carried me up the stairs. And I called my grandmother and I said, I need help. And the message had been carried to me by a guy that I had dated in LA, who was sober, like 8 or 9 years sober. And of course that didn't work out because I'm heavy in my addiction. And, but I remembered that he talked about the joy that he found in sobriety and how good life was. And, so when I first, you know, when I came into it, the 12-step program, I knew that my life could change and I trusted it. And, you know, I got a sponsor. I started working the steps, not right away. I was in and out for a little while. And then something clicked, you know, it became the, instead of compliance, I actually practiced surrender and honesty. And, I decided I didn't want to die. And gosh, life is so different now. Life is so, so beautiful. And it's,
how long ago was that, Lauren, that you had, that you came into the rooms that you were sick and tired of being sick and tired? How long ago was that?
So that was 8 years ago, October, the beginning of October, 2012. And I was in and out for about 3 months. I was going to the meetings and I really wanted what they had, but I couldn't physically stop. So I would go to meetings and then immediately go drink afterwards. Until after 3 months of that, I was suicidal again because I just felt like I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I couldn't stop. You know, I wanted it so badly. And that was probably the most painful time I've ever had in my entire life, to want something so badly in my heart and my emotions and like not being mentally and physically being able to stop, because I was deep in that compulsion, that phenomenon of craving. And and then just one morning I came to and it was just, it was done. And I called my sponsor and I went over to her house. There was a blizzard and I didn't care. I traveled 2 hours on the subway through a blizzard because I wanted it so badly. And we went through the steps very quickly and I just started diving in. You know, I got a commitment. I started meeting people. I made friends. I went to tons of meetings. The big shift for me was that all of the energy and the time and the thinking and the emotional energy that I was putting into drinking and using and going after that, I transferred it into my recovery. And that's the same truth for me today. And that's how it really works for me today. You know, when it doesn't ask me, my recovery does not ask of me the same things that the alcohol and drugs did. You know, it doesn't put me into shame. Like there's no shame in my recovery. There's no incomprehensible demoralization. There's no guilt. There's no rumination, you know? It was that transference. And I think that, you know, speaking like scientifically, you know, it is like the neuroplasticity and it is building new neural pathways, right? And really at the core of it, it's just changing my thinking. It's that simple. It's redirecting my thinking. It's redirecting my energy and where I'm looking in this world, you know, instead of looking in at for self and trying to feel like I have to take care of everything and manage and figure it out and think about it and plan. Now I'm redirecting that and I'm looking in a different direction. When I wake up in the morning, it's so crucial for me to put that train on the right tracks, because I have two tracks today. It can either be in one direction, which is my old way of thinking, which is all about my self-centered fear and getting what I want or clinging to what I think I need. Or it can be towards the direction of spirit and love and service and giving, you know, and
You mentioned something, Lauren, you spoke my love language when you said neuroplasticity. Oh yeah. My gosh. I cannot wait to dive into this.
Yeah.
All right. So here's, I love that. And I know people listening, Lauren, are getting so much value from just this short conversation that we've already had. Just so thank you. I just want to acknowledge you for sharing your experience, Strength and Hope, sharing your journey. People right now listening, it's the new year. People are, you know, sober, curious. They're curious about the 12 steps. And this information that we're sharing is going to help a lot of people. So I just want to acknowledge you first and foremost. And when we talk about neuroplasticity, I'm so glad you brought this up, because the analogy I use is when I came into the room 6 years ago, my subconscious, which is the computer system, was corrupt. All the files were corrupt and damaged. And, you know, that negative thinking, the shame, guilt, resentment, fear, anxiety, the way I thought, my computer, my internal computer was corrupt. And so everything I started doing on day one of sobriety is building new neural pathways. And the cool thing is science, they can actually show these parts of our brain lighting up when we build these new neural pathways, these new positive, healthy habits, that we can build these new ways of thinking and being. And so for me, the prayer and the meditation and the gratitude list and the positive affirmations, all these things that I started doing on my day one of sobriety that I still do today, is building new neural pathways in the brain, new ways of thinking. Mm-hmm. And that's the best part. It's malleable, our brains, mm-hmm. and we can get our brains to work for us, not against us. And that's the part about 12 steps in recovery that I really love talking about, is the science and this neuroplasticity that we have the power to change our brains and take action that rewires our circuits.
Totally. Because it's not just this like spiritual, like in the clouds, woo, like whatever kind of program, right? It's not telling me I have to just get rid of all my stuff and move to an ashram and you know, in Nepal, which and I totally could if I levitate. Wanted to. Yeah. Right. It's actually very practical stuff. And, you know, I think it's, yeah, it's just, it's so, I mean, really, I feel like 4 through 9 in our steps, it's cognitive behavioral therapy, right? It's a lot of stuff that a lot of therapeutic models have, you know, it's this inventory. We look at what's working, what isn't. We start changing our behavior. We start taking responsibility, which, you know, leads to integrity. And, you know, we're talking about building new neural pathways, but honestly, I feel like those pathways were already there. That's what we were born with. You know, that's what we had. I mean, things were hard for me growing up, as for many, many people they are. But I remember the joy. I remember the curiosity, the imagination. I remember the simplicity of childhood that brought me so much like wonder. I remember love that I had for my pets or being outside or reading. And I'm getting all that back, because recovery, the definition of recovery, is getting back what was lost or stolen. And so I think those neural pathways were there. They're just dormant. And so we're not only are we rebuilding some, but we're also relighting those neural pathways, and we're strengthening them so that when I'm in a situation where my old defaults of character start popping up, I can pause and I can breathe. And I can return to this present moment, and I can switch back to those, you know, and what a gift that is. And I think that's really what brings me emotional equanimity, you know, emotional balance, because that's the big frontier, that emotion, the emotional stuff. And one of the definitions of spirit is actually the seat of the emotions. So when I have emotional sobriety, I have spiritual sobriety.
I love
and
that.
And vice versa, you know.
I love it. And when I think of, when I hear you talk, what comes up, Lauren, is coming back home, to get recentered, coming back home to ourself. That's what feels right for me when I think of recovery and coming back to that innocence, the joy, the peace as kids. And so, yeah, that feels good.
Yeah. It's, you know, that's one of my favorite prayers. And when I use the word God, I'm just going to go ahead and preface this for anybody that's out there. I grew up in a Southern Baptist evangelical church. If that works for you, that's great. But for me, it brought up a lot of, there was actually a lot of trauma with that, because it was a punishing or rewarding God. And there was a lot of sin, and there was a lot of secrecy and stuff that goes into it. And for me, what I have discovered is this deep, deep, deep well of spirituality within myself, because that's the greatest plot twist of all of them in the 12 steps, is that all these things that I was looking for on the outside were already inside of me. You know, for a long time, for many years, I thought that these steps were opening up this channel for me to receive spirit to come into me, to receive the light and the love. But really, it was just clearing the channel to let out the light and the love that was already inside of me. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm really doing. And so when I talk about God, it's just a small word that just encompasses something that's almost inexplicable. It's all those feel, like, I feel God. I don't have it in my head. I can talk about it and I can understand it. And I study it, and I study all these. I love looking at all the mystic aspects of all these different spiritualities and religions. And I go out in nature and I experience what I understand as God. So when I say God, I just wanted to say that, and, you know, in case anybody, you know, is struggling with that, because I do know that that's something that keeps people out. But I've been able to make it what it is for myself, what brings me joy and brings me peace. And it's, yeah, but one of my favorite prayers is, God, I want to come home. When I'm struggling, when I'm lost, when I'm in doubt, when I'm in fear, I just simply say, God, I want to come home. And in that moment, like, I can be present. Like, it really is the be here now for me. Like, I'm here and I'm now and I'm home. Because I'm home in my body today. I could never be on my own. Like, I hate it. I did not want to be by myself. I did not want to be in this skin. And now today I am. I'm completely comfortable with that, which is radical. Mm. So
I love how you talked about the God thing, and like, people get, I know, scared or put off with the word God. And, you know, it could be good orderly direction. It could be higher power, universe, love, light. I know there's a good friend of mine in the program, his football that he carries around is his God, his higher power. And so just something that is bigger than us, that is responsible for things happening, call it whatever you want, but it's a spiritual program. And so what I would love for you to do, Lauren, is, you know, you so succinctly in our time together on Tuesday walked us through the 12 steps, each of the steps. So for people who are not familiar with the 12 steps, can you walk us through like what they mean to you? And so for people, like, they hear the 12 steps, but they don't know what it consists of. Can you give us an overview?
Oh, sure. So in step one, to me, I think it's, well, I'm going to preface all this by saying, you know, this meeting that we go to talks about the principles. And we hear that, right? Like, carry, you know, practice the principles in all of our affairs. But what does that mean? And the principles are the guiding things that just inform me about how to act, you know, so that I can carry all of these things, all these spiritual tools that I learn. How do I actually apply them in my everyday life? So in step one, I admitted I was powerless over alcohol, that my life had become unmanageable. And those are not two separate things. He actually uses a hyphen there, not an and. It's actually an expansion on the idea of, like, I am powerless over alcohol. And for me, that's the honesty. I mean, for a long time, for many years, I'm one of those alcoholics. I knew I was an alcoholic, but I didn't care. And I didn't think that there was anything, there was no way for my life to be any different. I was just so full of despair and hopelessness that I just kind of gave into it. So I knew I was powerless over alcohol, and I knew that my life had become unmanageable because my outside life was completely unmanageable because my inner life was unmanageable. I had my emotions and my thinking were just so erratic and whatever. But so the honesty though, the honesty of, like, conceding to my innermost self that alcohol was not the answer. The alcohol was never, ever, ever going to be the solution ever again. And now for me, in my day-to-day life, I have to have the honesty with myself that I'm powerless over life itself, and that when I try and manage it, it becomes unmanageable. So the great thing about step one, though, as soon as I admit that powerlessness, I am empowered because I open up the door for something greater than myself. I align myself with the flow of life, with higher power. And step two, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And I fought that one hard because I was like, I've always been insane. What do you mean? Can't be restored to something I've never been. What? You know, I was like, God, sure, whatever. Some people, you know, have issues with God, but I had the word insanity. And the great thing is there are two questions posited to us in step two. One is, do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity? And the second one is, I can't remember right off the top of my head, but it's, you know, is God is everything or God is nothing? What is our choice to be? And, like, for me, that's it, right? It's that's the hope. That's the hope we find in step two. because I didn't believe I could restore to sanity, but I had people that I met that talk like me, but they were now different. And they trusted this program would work for me. And so I trusted them. And so I have been restored to sanity. And I actually understand now that there was a time in my life where I had a sane reaction to alcohol and I had a sane reaction to life. And I've been restored to that. And it's not only a restoration to sanity, but step two is a restoration to hope. You know, because hopelessness, and I'm borrowing this from Brené Brown, you know, that hopelessness is the state of thinking and feeling that tomorrow will be no different than today. When I have hope, I know that in this moment, like I can change moment to moment. Like, you know, no feeling is final, no feeling is fact. And in fact, the only constant is change. And because of impermanence, anything is possible. Step two is really where I started stepping into the mystery, the great mystery, which is also how I look at my higher power. Step three, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to a higher power as I understand higher power. This is where I start practicing surrender and when I start practicing faith. Kierkegaard, who is accredited with the leap of faith, he actually never said leap of faith, but what he did talk about was that the thinking can't fix the thinking, that we have to take a step, we have to take an action. And this is really what that is, right? Like my alcoholism cannot fix my alcoholism. My thinking can never fix my thinking. So I have to take an action. And for me, the 12 steps have become one step, 12 parts. And it's really that one step is from self to God. And that's really what this understanding, this deeper understanding of step three has been to me, you know? And like, now I don't have to have faith. I can just have trust, because trust is faith with experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I have so many experiences of step three, the surrender of, we let go by letting be, you know, letting go to me is not like handing away or giving away or, you know, any of that. It's just, I relax and I have the willingness to be in reality exactly as it is right now without trying to change it in my head or in my heart. And from there, I can learn how to take proper action. Step four, I made a fearless, thorough and fearless moral inventory of myself. This is the courage step. We talked about courage this last week. And, you know, I need all of these principles and steps in the order that they happen, because they all feed and flow into each other. So when I have hope, when I have honesty with myself, and then I have hope, and then I have faith and trust, I can step into courage. And courage is, the root of it is the heart, right? So we're moving from the head to the heart. Mm-hmm. And I have the courage to start showing up authentically as myself with my whole story, because I am exactly who I am supposed to be, as are you, as is everybody who's listening, you know, and I don't have to make up a different story for myself today. I was, you know, when I was drinking, using, and people pleasing, I was like so many different personalities and people, and what do you need from me, and all this kind of stuff. And now I can just show up as myself. And so I carry that courage. I also, one of the definitions of courage, you know, it's three parts, right? It's the courage to begin, it's the courage to persevere, and it's the courage to have patience, you know? So it doesn't mean that I'm eradicating fear. This program talks a lot about fear, but it's not fear as in, oh, this person was running a red light and almost ran over me. That's legitimate fear. You know, I also have like a healthy little fear for picking up again, because like, I know what's going to happen. But my alcoholism, I felt like everything was a jaguar hiding in the jungle, you know, hiding in the bushes, right? That it was going to kill me. Everything was self-centered fear, the self-centered fear of losing what I have and not getting what I want will make me do insane things. So that's the fear that we're starting to turn over and to have lifted from our lives. But what courage does is, like, when I have these fears, it teaches me that I can walk into situations even with that fear, because I have this higher power back in step three and step two that I'm, you know, I'm in companionship with now. And then in step five, It's the integrity step. You know, I share it with my sponsor. I also have good friends that I share things with, and I get honest with myself and with higher power. And it really starts with the honesty with self. Integrity, yeah, like it's transactional, you know, honesty of like just being honest in all of my affairs as much as I'm capable of being. But the integrity actually means wholeness. So I'm wholeheartedly showing up as my authentic self in life without trying to hide any of it or change any of it. And then step six, I become willing to turn those defects of character over, those defects of character that I recognize in steps four. You know, step four is just an inventory. It's an unemotional inventory of what is working in my life, what is not, looking at my part in things. I'd love inventory today because I absolutely love it because it's so freeing. It's just so freeing to be able to take responsibility of like, and to like get into like causes and conditions and like to look at this stuff. And, you know, I needed outside help for it as well because there's a lot of trauma that was informing my decisions. And listen, ego, I don't think ego is bad. Ego isn't good. Ego is neutral, but it's sometimes very misinformed, you know. And so in step six, I become entirely ready, which means completely, wholly willing, you know. And this is really where you need courage because, like, I needed these things were protecting me for so long. It was my armor. It was my armor. And yes, like, it did save me. It saved me for many years. They didn't just rise out of like a vacuum, you know, but I don't need them anymore. And I'm trying to use them in my real life today. And they're causing a lot of harm to others and to myself. So, but it takes courage to let go of this armor. It's like a security blanket. It takes courage to be in this unknown world, like, you know, little naked child without my armor.
I think of spirituality by subtraction when I hear you say that.
Yeah. It's also, you know, like we talk about being a channel, and like, this is just the stuff I come in step six and seven, well, really four, five, six, and seven to recognize that this stuff is just clogging me up, you know, it's just clogging me up. And really, when I start doing the trauma work, I was shown that this stuff is shrapnel that's deeply embedded in me. It's like festering inside of me. It's poisoning me. And so I have to go in and do this emotional surgery to start looking at this stuff, to turning wholly towards it so I can start digging it out so that I can actually start to heal. Because if I start spiritually bypassing this stuff, that stuff is still in there. If I'm just trying to just like feel better and like just automatically like have this spiritual connection with higher power without doing this stuff, it's still in there. And it's going to start coming up in weird ways, like harmful ways, even sober. And then so step seven, you know, one through six to me is just like kind of the preparatory steps. I'm like, I've decided that I'm going on this trip. I've made a list of things I want to pack and take on this trip. I packed my suitcase. I've gotten to the airport. And then step seven is really where I get on the plane. Because this is really where I turn the corner. This is really where I start stepping into the realm of the spirit. You know, we're human beings, and that's two parts, right? We're human and we're being. And this human side of me has to participate in this world. You know, I'm here on this earth, like I'm participating, but this beingness, that's my spirit. You know, that's the boundless, infinite thing inside of me, inside of all of us, you know, this oneness. And I think so much of my suffering has been like trying to combine the two, you know, and that still today is like where I have to really like look and see, you know, because I can feel, it's so funny to me. Like I have this, like I said, I had a near death experience, which left me with absolutely no fear of death. Like I had this amazing, incredible, like non-dual experience, just this wholeness, this love. It's just like, oh my gosh. So I have no fears about that kind of stuff, but then I'll have these very like human fears that just seem so silly in retrospect, right? But they will make me act in certain ways that are harmful. So in step seven, I start having the humility that, like, man, just take all of me, good and bad. Like, I don't know. I really don't know what's good or what's bad in me. Just here, take all of it. Here, like, I'm stepping into this. I really just want to be a channel. I just want to have purpose and I want to have unity. Oof. And then the step eight. So step eight is actually like where we do more inventory. In my sponsor family, we actually write out all of our amends, not just a list of people that we've harmed, but we write out the amends because I need to go over it with somebody before I step out and make those amends. And so here I'm really looking at the harm that I've done people and to myself. That's been painful. Even now, 8 years in, you know, it's still like, oof, oof.
Yeah.
Now, you know what? So much of like why I drank was because I knew I was harming people and I was so filled with shame over it. Right.
I can relate to that so much.
So I just have the humility. I was just like, I don't know. And, you know, Bill Wilson didn't like to repeat words. And so that's actually in one of his letters. He said, that's why we say defects of character in step six and then shortcomings in step seven. But really, I love the word shortcoming because if I flip that around, it's just coming up short of what it's possible for me to be in this world.
For people listening, Bill Wilson was the one of the founders of AA. So when she references Bill Wilson, he is one of the people responsible for us on the phone right now, some 80 years later, who have helped millions and millions of people, just one alcoholic talking to another, like what we're doing right now.
Exactly. I think he would just be so tickled with all of the technology and just so pleased.
Well, how you and I met on Zoom.
Yeah, that's wild. You know, it's wild. This has been such a, you know, it's so funny. This year has just been, you know, my outside life, like my career, I don't know, money, I don't know, you know, not great, either of those. But like my inside, my spirit, this has been such an expansive time for me. Because I've gotten to hear, like, if you can't go out, you go in. More meditation, more new friends, more connection, more, you know, it's just been this beautiful time.
I do. Like the fact that you and I got to connect and the fact that we're like, we're going to be besties, just so you know, we're going to be besties forever. Like the fact that we met on Zoom in a recovery, 12-step meeting, that technology brings us all together and I'm more connected, Lauren, just like you said, I'm more connected now, my insides, I'm more connected than ever before. And technology, this opportunity with Zoom to connect with people all over the world at any time, it's a beautiful thing. So I'm so glad you touched on that for people listening. Like a lot of people are saying, you know, when I hear people say 2020 is the worst year of my life, I'm like, okay, were there opportunities to grow for people in recovery? If you got sober in this year, you know, to have access to the tools, this design for living that you are so beautifully articulating for people. I love this. Like people have more access to it now than ever before.
Oh, it's been amazing. It's just been absolutely incredible. You know, this so much of like what this, you know, this design for living has taught me is just like, you say yes. You know, like you say yes, like when these new things come up, like you just say yes. And oh my gosh, I was just so excited to go to my favorite meetings in Paris and go to meetings in LA and, you know, all this kind of stuff and just meet new people. And also just to get really simple with life. You know, this year has really been about simplicity and it's been about going in the direction of the things that I love. You know, like the real things that I love, not the external things that I think are going to bring me joy or happiness or serenity, but just really like getting in touch with like that inner, you know, the things that nourish me, the things that bring me joy. You know, I used to be brought to my knees in despair. Like I was just, you know, just crushed by despair and shame. And, you know, this way of life today has brought me to my knees in wonder. I stand in wonder. One of my favorite, Dr. Wayne Dreyer, whom I adore, you know, he says to give yourself the gift of awe and wonder. Set aside five minutes in the morning to go outside and just look in childlike wonder at this world. You know, this body of mine used to be used as a vehicle, like a machine for more. Like, what can I get? Like, always on the run, just like, you know, I was poisoning it at the same time. And now today, this body of mine, I get to use my six senses to experience this world, which is such a gift. Mm. It is just so, so beautiful. But step eight. Yeah, so step eight, you know, that's the love step. It's also, you know, but it takes humility, it takes courage, it takes trust, it takes all of the ones that we've talked about, you know. And so step eight, I made that list, and it's a two-parter, step eight. I made a list of all people that I'd harm, and I became willing to make amends to them all. And this is the clutch step, because this is where I really start to feel higher power working in my life, because I can do the list. That's my part. This is a cooperative partnership with higher power to me, right? I wanted everybody to take care of me. I expected just the world to owe me a living, you know, and so I can't do that with higher power. I have to do my part as well. So I make the list. That second part though, I have to ask for willingness, because I can't come up with it on my own. I have to be willing to be willing, you know. And then the cool thing is, like, I have these moments that I remember so clearly, my first and big amends, that shift inside of me where it's like, oh my God, I just woke up and I was like, I'm willing. You know, this huge block had moved inside of me. Oof, it was powerful stuff. It still is. Step nine, I make direct amends to all people I had harmed, except when to do so would hurt them or others. You know, courage again. And listen, I'm like, I'm not done with all of my amends, because what happens in this program for me is that the longer I keep doing it, the more I remember.
I'm so glad you said that.
It's just like, so we do the best as we can when we are there. I still have one big one that, like, I'm still sitting on, and that's just my journey, you know, because, like, I have to just get in so much pain that I'm willing to do it. And that's the great thing, is like, I don't have to get into abysmal amounts of pain before I make a change today. Like, now I have space, I have a gap in between. I can look at something and say, like, oh, I know where that's going. Let me just do something different. And that's spiritual progress. Those small, subtle changes in behavior or thinking or emotions.
Let me say something real quick, Lauren, to that point. You know, I've been through the steps two different times with two different sponsors. The second go around for me, I wasn't aware of the people in step eight and nine that I had this opportunity to make amends to. The first time I was in a different mindset, and I did the best I could with what I had. And then the second time around, a lot of it comes in meditation when I'm connected to God, in step 11 that you're going to speak on shortly, that conscious contact, in that my prayer and meditation, that meditation when I'm listening, after I pray, I'm talking to God, and then I meditate, I listen. And what happens is God places on my heart the people who I have an opportunity to make amends to that I didn't even realize I had the opportunity. And that's the best part, is when I'm ready, it's the opportunity arises. And so I'm really glad to hear you say that.
Oh, totally. And oh gosh, there's like, this step is just so amazing. It's just so incredible. There's this other like game changer that I've been doing these last couple of years with step nine. It's kind of doing a reverse step nine, where I go in and express gratitude for people that I didn't necessarily harm. But I go and tell them thank you. And it's reopened like these relationships, these friendships with people that I haven't spoken to in years. And maybe I do owe them amends when I actually really think about it. Because like, if they, maybe I didn't outwardly do them harm, but you know, if they were having to take care of me, or if I took energy or time or money or something from them, you know, and I didn't express gratitude, that is a harm. That's not how I want to live today. you know, so I get to go back and I get to say thank you to people.
I like
that. And it's just been just this other layer, you know, and, you know, this is really where we start stepping. This is like, we're squarely in the spirit realm of the spirit now, because these are the kind of things I could not do on my own. This is where I really have to feel alignment with a higher power. And that's why it's step nine and not at step two. You know, when I first came in, I went and I was very emotional. I thought I was sober, and I was emailing people these very like emotionally raw, like, I'm so sorry for my behavior. It was the alcohol, whatever. And then I drank again. And like in step nine, I'm not going to people and saying it's the alcohol. I'm saying it was me. It's saying like, I was wrong. I'm here because of the harm that I've done you, you know? And it's not about trying to have a relationship with them again. It's not about me trying to rid myself of guilt or shame. It's me showing up for life. It's me resetting that energy, me taking responsibility. You know, again, like the channel, this is, so I've unclogged the channel. Now I'm repairing the channel. I'm repairing it so that when I start doing 10, 11, and 12, now that channel is whole and it's clear. My favorite ninth step story, I'm going to tell this real quickly. My grandparents ended up taking me in when I was like 13. I'm super, super, super close with them. And of course, those are the people that we harm the most, right? Mm-hmm. They're just there, firing squad. And I was my first trip back to Georgia, visiting home. I was almost a year clean. I was doing my first amends with my family, and it was after a cousin's wedding. And my grandfather and I have a huge family. And that I love so dearly. And he just happened to drive me home. We went home a little bit early because he needed to do his exercises. He just had open heart surgery, and we were there randomly by ourselves, which is a rarity in our family. And we were talking, and I really wanted to do my amends with him. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And this is a person I'm super close with. I love dearly. And we couldn't do it. And so he was like, okay, well, I'm going to go get ready for bed. So he walks in the bedroom, and I'm sitting at the kitchen table and I'm praying. I just start praying and I say, God, I can't do it on my own. I need help. And as I'm praying, I feel a hand on my shoulder, and it's my grandfather. And he just says, are you sure there isn't something else you want to talk about? Mm. You know, and so that for me, that's it, right? Like, I can't do it on my own, but I totally am empowered, you know, when I align myself with spirit, with source, with love, with light, whatever you want to call it.
Mm, that's beautiful.
Yeah. And so in step 10, step 10 saves me from having to make those ninth step amends, because I just promptly admit when I'm wrong. I just say that I'm wrong. You know, I say that I'm sorry. And, you know, I start practicing forgiveness in steps 9 and 10. Forgiveness, when you forgive somebody, you let the prisoner free, only to learn that it's you. Mm-hmm. You are the prisoner, you know. Absolutely. Forgiveness is what breaks those bonds, that person. Like, I carried my parents into like so many present day situations, and like forgiving them allowed me not only to see them as people, but it freed me from bringing all their stuff into my current day. You know, and we continue to take personal inventory. I continue to watch for this stuff because, yeah, we've cleared that channel, but man, those weeds grow back, you know. I gotta keep on it. And, you know, I think it's so important. You know, I just want to make it very clear that this is not like a sadist kind of thing, right? I'm not like looking at the harms that I've done. I'm not looking at my things that I'm doing wrong or my defects of character in a shameful way. I'm not beating myself up for them. I'm just having a very clear and sane approach to them. I'm like, oh yeah, that's what it is. I'm a human being. Mm. I'm just human. And like, these are my default settings for a long time. All right. That's what it was. What can I do differently? And so having that very objective, like non-emotional attachment to these things has been crucial for me.
I'm glad you mentioned that. That was, thank you for, like, that's beautifully said. And that, yeah. What I think of when you say that, Lauren, is we can't change something if we don't first become aware of it. And so our awareness, it starts with the awareness, and then we can change what we draw into our consciousness.
Yeah, totally. Awareness, acceptance, action.
Yes.
And, you know, it's, this is the thing I tell my little sponsees all the time is, you know, once we become aware of something that isn't working, it never works again. Like once I became aware that alcohol wasn't working for me, it never worked again. It just ruined it. Once I became aware that people pleasing wasn't working for me, it has never worked for me again, you know? And listen, people pleasing is operating with low grade dishonesty. I am dishonest if I'm being people pleasing. When somebody asks me how I'm doing, and I say, I'm okay, I'm fine, and I'm really not, I'm lying.
People pleasing, low grade dishonesty.
Woo! Yes.
And that's, uh-huh. I'm going to write it down.
Mm-hmm. Because I think it's just enough, you know, I don't think it's harmful, you know, like, I don't think it's harmful. And people pleasing to me is not like giving somebody something like to make them happy or make them like me. It's like trying to modify my behavior, trying to modify who I am to either avoid a conflict, or just to make things, I don't even care if you really like me, but like, I just want things to be okay. I don't want you to dislike me, you know? I think that's different than like having somebody like me, and to be free of that has been amazing. It's been amazing. Yeah. So, now we're at my favorite step. Step 11, you know, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand God, asking only for his will for us and the power to carry that out. You know, I hear it often said that this is the prayer and meditation step, but to me it isn't. This is the seeking step. The directive in step 11 is to seek. The how is through prayer and meditation, and the why is to improve our conscious contact. It isn't to make ourselves feel better, you know, and I think that's spiritual bypassing. Like, I have to ask myself in these situations, like, I can use these tools to make myself feel better, but instead of doing that, I ask myself, am I using these tools to make myself feel better, or am I using these tools to have a better understanding of higher power? Am I using these tools to grow and experience and understanding? Because that's really where my life starts expanding. And, you know, the prayer and the meditation has just been so crucial, because like I said, I was in fight, flight, freeze mode. And we're going into the science part, right? Like meditation, it deactivates that. It deactivates the fight, flight, freeze mechanism that gets triggered, where I can understand that I don't have to be in fear. I can sit still. And I could not sit still before. I could not, you know, and like learning how to do that has been crucial. And I have a meditation practice. For me, that means sitting in silence for 20 to 45 minutes every day in the morning, first thing in the morning before my brain can get going. And the silence is where I hear. The silence is where I understand that I am taken care of now and tomorrow, any other day that I have the great privilege to be on this earth, experience this life. And then I pray. I meditate first and then I pray. Because once I do that, if I meditate first and then I go into prayer, by the time I get to prayer, I understand that all of my needs are met. I don't need to ask for anything except for my life to be directed. And like, this is, you know, AA has given me the spiritual taproot of purpose. I have a primary purpose that I come to in step 12, which is to stay sober and help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. And in that spiritual taproot, I've been given so many other purposes in life. You know, I can, and that's really where my journey is today, is like practicing these principles in all areas of my life, you know, all of them. because they're like, with my career, I'm in a creative career, and like, I'm still coming up with some blockage, you know, some blocks, some like old ways of thinking myself, you know, like all, like me, you know, my fears and insecurities and fear of success.
I get it. I can relate, you know, to that for sure.
Totally. You know? And so it's like, how do I allow higher power to discipline me in these ways, using these principles? How do I apply them in all aspects of my life? And that's really when I want to grow into. And I think one of my favorite parts in our big book is, you know, when we come up against these fears, we ask higher power to remove them. And at once we begin to outgrow fear. Like, I'm outgrowing it. Like it's a prison. It's too small of a cage for me today, for you too, for anybody, you know. It's just like, we get to actually expand. You know, it's this model for living. It's, I know it can be intimidating. It can't make much sense. Like, I couldn't make heads or tails. So when I first came in, I was like, oh, those are just a bunch of words on the thing. But I heard people talking and I felt them. And I felt their love and their peace and their serenity. And that's what I wanted. And you just don't have to do it alone. I couldn't have done it alone, you know? Not at all. So thanks so much for letting me share that. I'm sure there's so much, you know?
That was amazing. Like, first off, I want to let you know, that's the, I've done 89 podcast episodes. That's the least amount I've ever talked. And that's a compliment.
I'm sorry.
That's a compliment to you. No, that's a compliment, because you were in flow. God was speaking through you. Your energy and your light, I could see elevated, and it was perfect. And like you just shared, and I'm so glad we got this recorded, because it's helping and going to continue to help so many people, the way you just articulated, Lauren, the 12 steps and the principles and how it applies in your life. You just broke it down in a way that is just fascinating, remarkable. And I want to acknowledge you, because me not talking is the biggest compliment to you, just letting you go. And I can see your spirit and like your vibration, you were shining in your energy was raised when you were speaking about it. And that's how I know God was speaking through you. I felt
it. Thank you. Thank you. And, you know, it's so funny, just, you know, I'm so, that shift, right? Between like, you know, like, cause I feel that, I feel when higher power is like, when I'm not in my own way and whatever. And then as soon as you said that, I start getting back into myself. Right. And I said, I'm sorry.
Not accepted.
You know,
apology, not accepted.
But that's something that like is so wild to me, you know, because like when I say I'm sorry, what I'm really saying is I'm sorry for being alive, or I'm sorry for being who I am. And that's something that I'm trying to look at. So I'm trying to be aware of like when I say that, because I'll say like, I'm sorry, you know, like you know, accepting compliments. Oof.
Yeah. Oof.
You know, it's hard. Yeah, you know,
accepting compliments is, here's what comes up, and I'm in the work just like you are, and which is why I wanted to share this, like giving and receiving, like to be a conduit and a channel and an instrument of God's love and peace. Like that's one of my prayers every day, Lauren, is to say, God, help me be a channel and instrument and vehicle of your love and peace. And so it's easy for me to give love and give compliments and give kindness and give compassion, but receiving, I'm in the work. And I know what happens is I'm cutting off that energy exchange, but if I don't accept it. And so I had a friend compliment me yesterday, and I said, thank you. I receive it and accept it. And that's what I've been trying to do, to acknowledge their love, to receive it and acknowledge it that I received it. That's been something that's been helping me to keep that exchange of giving and receiving love and kindness and compassion and all that I do, to acknowledge when they say it, instead of run and hide and play small and avoid it. I'm actually stepping into it and trying to receive it and acknowledge that I received it.
That's so good. This is actually something I'm working on in trauma therapy, like this exact thing, just like you are articulating about that flow. Like I love giving, like it brings me so much joy, you know, and Oof, but that other direction. But what I'm really doing is I'm robbing that other person of the opportunity to give, you know, just like you were saying. It's the same thing with money. Money is just another form of energy. I have to work on believing that I am deserving or adequate enough to receive money for the gifts and the talents that I've been given, you know, 100%. And this is just, you know, and like, who knew, like when I came in, I just didn't want to die. And like, now I get to look at all of this, these other things and like what a gift it is to be able to turn towards it. I feel like it's spelunking. I'm like, yes, let me deep dive into this stuff, because it's going to be so yucky and gross and uncomfortable sometimes. Oof. But when I'm in it, I know that because I've had prior experiences. I taught the other day when we were at that meeting about, you know, around like 2 or 3 years sober, I discovered within me a deep, deep well of rage. And I am, you know, I'm bopping around like Pollyanna, like, oh, I'm living in the sunlight of the spirit. Everything's great. And then I was blindsided by like a Mack truck of rage. I was like, where is this coming from? But then I remembered, you know, in childhood, because I had to stuff everything down, there would be times where I would have rage come out, especially my last 2 years of drinking. I was like so emotionally and violent and like verbally violent and just like, just, oh. And, but the difference is, instead of trying to put the lid on it or ignore it or, you know, whatever, tamp it back down, I got honest about it. And I brought it to meetings and I brought it to people that care about me, and I stayed honest. And what would happen is like all these people whose sobrieties I completely admire, people with more time than me would come up and say like, hey, me too. And like, you just keep going and you're willing to show up and like do the work. And on the other side of it, I haven't, it took some time. It took years. And it wasn't all the time, but it would come up. And when it would come up, I would be so filled with shame about it and sadness and fear about it, that there were times that I was suicidal. Mm. And I got honest about that too and stayed honest about that. And now I'm on the other side of it. I'm through it. The only way around is through, right? And like, you have to do it. You can't, again, like you can't spiritually bypass.
And how free do you want to be? That's the question I ask myself every day.
Totally. And you know what's amazing is that all of this work has left me with thicker skin and softer heart, you know? And I used to take everything so personally. I was just like so fragile in that. And now I don't, you know, the four agreements.
Oh my gosh. Don Miguel Ruiz.
It's so great, right? And see, that's the thing about the 12 steps. This is the other seeking part that I love. It doesn't have to be just the 12 steps. It hasn't. Like, you know, if you're actually spiritually seeking, you're reading, you're looking at all these, you know, listening to other people, it has been the greatest joy of my life to be on the seeking journey. Mm. The seeking has been the expansive part. You know, I just read things, you know, like poetry, like Mary Oliver and John O'Sullivan and W.S. Merwin, you know, a lot of like nature-based, that, you know, the Stoics. I love the Stoics. The Stoics have given me a model for living. Like I said before, like the mystic spiritualities, or the mystic aspect of different spiritualities. I've gotten back in touch with the spirituality of my ancestors, which is nature-based. You know, nature has always been home for me, because in nature I see that even while it looks so chaotic, everything is completely in balance. Everything is happening exactly as it's meant to be. We're in January, which is, everything looks so barren on the outside, but deep beneath the earth, things are being nurtured, things are growing, so that in the springtime they can come out. You know, so much of me as a human being today is like, I'm so aligned with nature, with the cycles of nature, and this has just been this really cool experience.
So Lauren, let me ask you a question. First off, you're going to be a regular contributor this year, because we have so many other subjects I would love to explore that we can do it on round two. Spiritual bypassing, I want to go deep into that. I'm fascinated with that topic.
Oh, yeah.
I want to talk about trauma work that the 12 steps don't cover, yes. that I'm also in the work of, but we'll talk about that next time. But what I want to leave people with is people listening right now, sober, curious, 12 steps. What is a step for people listening that they feel that alcohol, drugs, something is getting in the way and blocking them? What is a step that people listening can take today, Lauren, that helps them or gets them the resources to get them the help that they think they need or to get them exposed to resources that they didn't know were there? Any advice? Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, you know, I'm in a 12-step program and that's what works for me. But I also know that that's not what works for everybody. And there are so many things out there and programs and groups of people and communities that are walking this path, that are walking this journey out of active addiction into recovery. And so what I hope anybody that might be struggling or just curious, find us, you know, AA is everywhere. It's so easy to find now. You just go to, just Google it. All the meetings are listed, Zoom, you know, New York, LA, London, Paris, Germany. There's some great ones in Berlin. There's also a Buddhist, you know, community that kind of practices the 12, something modeled after the 12 steps, or not modeled after, but aligned with. You know, there's so many things. One of my favorite Dharma programs is Dharma Punks. After we do a meditation, the leader, Josh Korda, talks a lot about, you know, the brain and how the brain works. And a lot of it has to do with addiction. There's so many resources. Just get curious. You know, so much about this sobriety is just about being curious, having a willing mind, an open heart, just saying like, hey, yeah, like maybe you don't have to make a decision. That's the thing. It's like, you don't have to decide right now, here and now. You can just say like, hey, yeah, like maybe. And that's just so much of my life today is just this, I don't know, maybe. And that has just carried me all the way home. And I know we've been talking a lot, but on the subject of home, one of my favorite things is, you know, we talk about being on the beam in sobriety. When I first came in, I was like, oh gosh, that sounds like a lot of work, staying on the beam. It's a balance beam. I gotta like, that's gonna be my life. That kind of sucks, you know, like sounds like a lot of work. But then I looked it up, and being on the beam came around during World War I. It's when they started using radio signals to guide the pilots. And these radio signals would guide the pilots when they were in the dark. They would guide them home. They would guide them to their target. They would guide them where they needed to be. And that's really what it is. We're just trying to find that beam that carries us home. We're just trying to find that path that carries us to a place where we feel home. Because listen, this time on earth, it's precious. It's precious. And I have that understanding today. So.
Oh my gosh, this is amazing. You are a beautiful soul, Lauren Osborne. You are a gift in my life. And I just want to acknowledge you again, like to share your truth and to be so vulnerable. And it was just perfect. And I just want to say thank you. Oh
gosh, well, thank you so much. Thank you for that. See, practicing. I'm practicing.
Yes, you're welcome.
So thank you. And same for you. You know, it's such a gift to be on a journey with other seekers. And because like we've been saying, you know, if anybody out there is wondering or curious, it doesn't have to be, life does not have to be hard. It does not have to be full of despair. It doesn't have to be something that's slogged through. And that's absolutely what recovery has given to me, and I know for you as well. So thank you so much for letting me be here.
For sure. Our mess becomes our message. Our test is now our testimony. And that's why it's so cool to be able to do life with people like you and Lauren's Instagram at why hello it's low. That's Lauren's.
That's me.
That's Lauren. Follow her. Be a part of her online community. She's going to be back on, friends, because spiritual bypassing, we're going to talk about that for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So much other stuff to dive into, and it's all spiritual awesomeness. And Lauren, I love you. And I just want to say thank you again, acknowledge you one more time for just being such a bright light and just sharing so openly with a thick skin and a soft heart.
Oh, thank you. And I love you too. You know, it's the oneness that we get to experience now, the unity.
Absolutely.
Truly. So thank you again.
We'll do it again soon.
Yeah.
All right. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Have a beautiful rest of your day.
Be well, everybody. Thank you.